1,000 votes, which put us right behind the Republican.
Yeah.
Pretty far behind in you know, numbers, but we did beat the Independent Party. The Independent Party is actually a major political party in Oregon.
They are, yeah.
I think mainly because people think that they're unaffiliated when they sign up as independent, but the candidate did not that ran with or under their banner did not campaign very hard, I think, and that's why I managed to beat him. I was surprised that I did a little bit better than the Green Progressive candidate.
Yeah.
I think that had largely to do with messaging, social media, and he's a organic farmer. He was working on his farm.
It
was right in the middle of harvest season.
Right. Yeah, I suppose it's bad timing.
Which, yeah, it's actually, I mean, it's unfortunate that we don't have a better way of bringing in candidates who have other things to do besides run for office.
Right.
It's very hard to take the time off. I'm spending some time now actually going to labor candidate school with AFL-CIO and learning some more about how to run for office. And really it's at least a year long commitment if you want to win. And so, definitely going back to the drawing board, catching up on time with my family, trying to make some extra money on the docks, working nights, and spending some time also catching up on some of the cases that I've taken on in my little law firm.
Nice. So. But yeah, I mean, it does seem like just running as a candidate would take, I mean, if you look at the presidential elections, they were campaigning for the last about 3 years, it seems, and I'd imagine you spent a good portion of the last year really kind of focused solely on that. So yeah, congratulations on coming in really, I guess, third in that campaign there. And
thank you.
Oh yeah. And yeah, excited to see where that goes in the next few years. Hopefully there'll be, I mean, at least it seems to me like what you and the other guy we had in here, Eric Navickas, did mm-hmm. was bring a more progressive set of policies and agendas to the discussion, you know, despite the fact that Wyden refused to debate, you know, at least your campaign was able to project, you know, the will of the working people into the election a little bit. So thank you for doing that.
Well, thank you for helping me. Absolutely.
Of course. So yeah, the next thing I'd like to jump into here is, I believe you have a resolution, that you'd like to kind of read over. I know it you actually just came from an organizing meeting. And so if you'd like to sort of bring us up to speed on what you got there, that would
yeah.
be awesome.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Credit goes to a number of folks, who have been kind of among the left, you know, labor agitators, it's a resolution for United Front Against the Trump Agenda, and it's been passed by the Oregon AFL-CIO Executive Committee, and essentially this is supporting protest on inauguration weekend and really delivering a clear message that labor is not accepting a lot of what the Trump administration embodies their agenda for this neoliberal kind of orthodoxy that just gets rid of regulation, gets rid of the protections that so many of us rely on to have a stable economy, to have make sure that ourselves and our family and our neighbors can weather a tough period, whether it's you know, an injury or a period of unemployment, and to make sure that, you know, our kids are educated and have the same opportunities that we've gotten or better. There's a real you know, sense of, you know, concern about the Trump administration, and for good reason. I mean, obviously that's an understatement. But I think also at this time, I hope that people that are organizers and leaders in their communities are recognizing this as an opportunity. We saw what we thought was the Republican Party falling apart, and then all of a sudden on election night it was clear that the Democratic Party, at least nationally, was looking for a new brand of leadership, or at least the left in general, mm-hmm. and hopefully the Democratic Party in Oregon can be a leader in that area. I met a whole lot of people in the Bernie you know, among the Bernie delegates who are working their way into the precincts and right. becoming committee people and trying to change the Democratic Party from within. And I also heard right after the election from a lot of friends who had not been involved in politics who are now like, this is it. I need to make the time for this.
Right.
And so I think it's really important for us to look at opportunities where we can get together and challenge folks to come out and create kind of an inclusive atmosphere where we can see who's really ready to stand up and look toward a better approach to leadership in this area. So yeah. Anyway, to get beyond generalities, do you want to read the resolution?
Yeah, I suppose. Let's see. I've just looked this over a little bit, but resolution from the United Front Against the Trump Agenda. It starts by saying the election of Donald Trump is dangerous for working people, especially immigrants, people of color, women, and the LGBT community. As president, Donald Trump, coupled with Republicans' control of the House and the Senate, raises the very real possibility of A, national anti-worker legislation, which would decimate labor unions, B, a Supreme Court friendly to another Friedrichs-type attack on public and private sector unions, C, an employer-friendly National Labor Relations Board, which could reverse the gains of the last several decades, D, an anti-union, anti-worker Department of Labor, E, the deportation of millions of undocumented workers, F, the exclusion, surveillance, profiling, and incarceration of our Muslim brothers and sisters, G, major restrictions on women's reproductive rights, H, the return of anti-LGBTQ laws, I, the increased intimidation and assaults on our most vulnerable members by racist, sexist, homophobic, and xenophobic predators. And it goes on to say, whereas spontaneous protests have erupted across the country immediately following the Trump election, many national and local student, labor, and community groups have planned for massive protests on the weekend of Trump's inauguration, which is January 20th through the 22nd. A united front of all those threatened by the Trump presidency will be needed to defend each, therefore, be it resolved, the AFL-CIO pledges to encourage its affiliates to join the labor unions for local protest actions on inauguration weekend. And be it finally resolved, the AFL-CIO will forward the resolution to its affiliates and allies, recommending that they join in on inauguration weekend actions as well. So I know that there is a major protest planned for Washington, D.C. itself, and I know that the Trump transition team has said that it's going to do everything it can to kind of suppress that. So I'd imagine, I mean, along with, there's like the Million Women's March, I believe, is what's going to be happening that day in D.C. But I know that there's going to be massive uprisings in every city across the country and probably a lot of cities around the world. So it's great to see that labor and the AFL-CIO are getting involved in that. I imagine, just based on our history, that here in Portland, we will see some incredible outpouring, a lot of action that entire weekend. And hopefully it'll be sustained throughout the next four and hopefully not 8 years. But yeah, so I suppose just moving quickly on from that, this is kind of the discussion that we'd like to have, or I'd like to have tonight, is sort of what the future or what the next few years for the labor movement and workers in general in this country will look like under a President Donald Trump. Donald Trump, of course, is famous as a real estate magnate and a guy who colludes with con men and mobsters and seems to do everything he can to suppress workers' rights. I mean, I know currently his hotel, the Trump International Hotel in Las Vegas, is basically, it's being condemned by the NLRB or the National Labor Relations Board. Its workers, or the workers in that hotel, have been trying to unionize for the last 18 months or 2 years or so, and the company itself has been fighting that every step of the way. So clearly, Trump himself, no friend to the labor movement, despite what he ran on, the rhetoric that he used in his campaign, and I think what he was able to convince a lot of his voters to support. So, I mean, I think the clearest example of that in an actual cabinet sense is that he appointed the labor secretary. I may get this name wrong, but his name is Andrew Pudzer or Pudzer. Mm-hmm. We were debating whether it's the ZD or DZ, but either way, Puzder is famous as being the CEO currently of CKE Restaurants. They're the folks who own Carl's Jr. and Hardee's, so fast food restaurants. And as we know, the fight for 15, the current fight for service workers and workers in general to raise the minimum wage has really been targeting fast food companies and the workers within those companies. And I know that particularly Carl's Jr. has been one of those companies that has pushed back a lot against that. Puzder himself is actually, he wrote a book a couple years ago, I think in 2010 or so. The book itself is called Job Creation, How It Really Works and Why Government Doesn't Understand It. So right there in the title, it seems like he's a guy who may be differing greatly from where the Obama administration's Labor Department has been. So what we know in that book, it's alleged. Now, he co-wrote this book, so there's a chance that he may not have posited this idea specifically, but it's put forward that the minimum wage should be abolished and that the minimum, like any minimum wage requirements, are a hindrance to business and growth. And he says the things that allow for strong growth of an industry or business in general are fewer government programs, reduced deficit spending, lower taxes, and cutbacks on all regulations of any kind. So that's the kind of guy that we now have as the chief champion for labor, for workers in this country, assuming that he is, in fact, voted in by Senate or approved by the Senate. One of the things that he has made clear that he's going to do if he is selected as the labor secretary is to push back or to completely eliminate Obama's proposed overtime pay rules that have yet to be approved. But that would basically bring millions of workers into the fold who can actually receive overtime. It would raise the wage that you have to be receiving in order to get overtime pay. So that would hurt millions of workers in this country. Clearly, based on his background and his history, he's no friend of labor. And it seems that his appointment to that position is a clear it's a clear statement from the Trump administration that they're going to be more in favor of management than workers. I suppose, do you have any thoughts on his appointment?
Well, I think, again, it reinforces this organizing work that the AFL-CIO has encouraged, and this kind of public opposition. And I think it's going to make it a lot easier for me to get members of unions out there in the streets.
Absolutely.
And I would encourage anyone holds any influence in an organization to get in touch with Jamie Partridge, who's obviously a regular fixture on this show.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's one of the people spearheading this effort to get folks out in the streets and to get these resolutions passed.
Right.
So that different organizations are out there carrying their banners and showing how strong we are in numbers when we march together and when we have a good solid push back against something like this. And so,
yeah.
And he's actually said, go ahead and put my number out there. So
what a guy.
yeah. So Jamie Partridge's number is 503-752-5112. Again, 503-752-5112. Definitely get in touch with him. If you think you can get that resolution passed, he'll send you a copy. Or if you want more details about what's going to happen that Saturday, the 21st of January, as far as getting out there for some peaceful protest to show that we're really solid and that there's really kind of a unified front against dividing all these kind of marginalized groups.
Right.
He can also be reached as email jamie.partridge, partridge, 1@gmail.com. But as far as this Carl's Jr. guy, he's Burton, someone man. that makes $17,000 in a day, who says we need to abolish a federal minimum wage of $7.25 an hour. In Oregon, we raised our minimum wage where it's $9.75 in Multnomah County. Although it's $9.50 in the rural areas.
Right.
We have three different sections. Anyway, so I think it's pretty clear that as time goes on, we're going to see more people kind of waking up to the fact that we really need to be together, and we need to make sure that you know, different limbs of progressive organizations or progressive interests are not chopped off and marginalized, and make sure that really the bleeding stops.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's yeah.
It is. I mean.
Out. Oh yeah.
I mean, it definitely seems that obviously the campaign, you know, over the last year to 2 years, people have been engaged, and the things that Trump has been doing have been appalling and, you know, brought people into action. But it seems like since, you know, the last month or so, since he was actually elected, there has been a real, like, the progressive left in this country has been galvanized to recognize that they have to, that it's going to take more than Facebook posts and, you know, tweets to actually resist what's coming over the next few years. As hard as it is to find a silver lining in everything that's happened, it is hopefully going to, this moment was going to be where the left, really the progressives, come together, recognize that, you know, a lot of the things that divide us are not as important as the things that unite us, and hopefully we'll be able to, you know, in 2018 be able to hopefully have progressive elements within the Democratic Party, or maybe other parties that have come together since then, or, you know, between now and then, take back seats in the House, hopefully some more in the Senate. And then in 2020, hopefully we can, if we do in fact have a federal presidential election, who knows what'll happen, but it would be great to have someone who runs more on the Bernie Sanders agenda than on the Hillary Clinton or the Donald Trump agenda. So yeah, this is the time to really, if you're out there and you are concerned about what's happening, what's to come, and are not engaged in any way other than just simply reading the news, then I would recommend getting organized. Certainly, I mean, coming out on inauguration weekend, and find an organization or a cause that you really support, and go out there and donate and get active for them, because every organization needs help right now. But get organized. So just jumping back. We're going to keep going back and forth to it, but just talking about Puzder himself, or Puzder, so not only is he a fan of abolishing the minimum wage, but he's also talked about how he sees federal assistance programs, you know, welfare, housing assistance programs, SNAP, you know, the food stamps, essentially, mm-hmm. are a hindrance to people moving up in a working environment, because he sees his take on the situation is that if someone is earning, you know, is working at the lowest level in a certain job, and they are earning enough or little enough to actually qualify for these benefits, and then they're offered a promotion that would take those benefits away, the individual will, he says this happens in his restaurants all the time, I don't really necessarily believe it, but people will opt not to take that promotion in order to continue receiving benefits, which I think he kind of has the whole situation backwards.
Well, I think, yeah, actually in that circumstance, I mean, I've met many people who say, look, I'd love to have Head Start, but I make just a little bit too much money.
Right.
And it's kind of this impossible kind of catch-22 where you need to make a certain amount of money to pay for childcare.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and so both parents are working, and or both guardians are working.
Yeah.
And all your wages go just toward the childcare. But just, and it's this, I think it's the same with a lot of these assistance programs, where the net gain of making a little bit more money means you're ineligible for some of these, you know, social safety net fixtures that people, you know, rely on.
Yeah.
And you know, whether it's Obamacare or food stamps, I mean, we're talking about basic necessities, human rights, really.
Yeah.
And I think what it comes down to is this, again, I really do believe it's a neoliberal orthodoxy. You know, it's kind of like this, if we produce tons and tons of stuff, someone will be there to buy it. And And they go casting around the world now. Americans can't afford to buy things. So they're like, hey, well, we need to open up markets in China so we can sell our goods over there.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, don't you understand that they can produce it for less over there because there aren't environmental restrictions and there aren't human rights? And that, and contrast that with a left that has understood that you really need to be concerned about the demand side while you're concerned about the supply side to make sure that I don't know who he thinks is going to buy his burgers when they come out of a robotic burger maker,
right?
And who's going to be able to afford to eat out if you don't have a minimum wage,
right?
If the bottom drops out of the market, there's really no consumer. And whether it's mechanization or globalization or just plain greed,
mm-hmm.
At some point we have to start thinking about how do we make sure that really everyone can participate in this economy and there aren't people that are falling through the cracks.
Yeah.
And no one on Trump's administration is concerned about those issues.
No, I mean,
and so I think that Trump then becomes a unifying force,
right,
for all of us.
Yeah,
that it's very hard to quibble about tactics or syntax when you know the house is burning down,
right?
And not to say that those differences are not important. But again, there is a great unifier here.
Yeah.
And it's important for us to recognize the consequences of not responding to this situation actively.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you touched on just a little bit there, the concept that he actually, the Puzder is a champion of automating jobs, you know, so taking the person behind the counter away and putting a machine, much like you'd see in the movie Idiocracy, there, so that, you know, instead of having 10 employees at a restaurant, you have 3 and they're all there to service the machines that are then actually providing the customer service. And that I think is sort of how he has the equation, and people who buy into that neoliberal doctrine have the equation wrong. That is, you know, it's not if you simply do away with regulations and allow, you know, the market to determine what people should be paid, and then all of a sudden there's going to be more jobs created because there's more growth. It's actually that you need to provide people with the living wage. You need to have enough people working and working at a wage that actually provides them with the means to go out and buy your products in order to create more jobs and grow your economy. But that's, you know, that's a misconception we've been laboring under for the last 30 years, at least, it seems.
Yeah, well, I mean, from my perspective, I view it as just another industrial revolution.
Right.
I mean, we had a coal revolution. We had another industrial revolution. You know, after World War II, there were all these incredible, you know, synthetic components and just amazing innovations. And there was always upset with regard to, you know, what are people going to do to make money?
Right.
And ultimately, you know, there is a use for people. And I don't subscribe to this notion that people are just going to have every, you know, be weighted on foot, you know, hand and foot by robots and there's not going to be any use for people. I think that to the degree that we can make sure that the benefits of these innovations are shared in a more egalitarian way,
right,
you could create a society where, you know, the creative and imaginative kind of like juices of humanity are fostered,
right,
and liberated by not having to do these kind of menial tasks. I mean,
exactly.
I think there is a utopian approach to this, but I think that it requires us to confront structures that consolidate all of the benefits in a few hands. And so what that means is taking, you know, the Microsofts and the Comcasts and the Googles and the other,
yeah,
all of these organizations that have really reaped the benefits now of their innovation and just saying, look, okay, you need to have a somewhat competitive structure. You know, we need to break up just the way that Teddy Roosevelt broke up some of the big banks and oil companies and train, you know, and railroads.
Yeah.
just to make sure that there wasn't too much power in too few hands. And you don't have to be a Marxist to think that the means of production needs to be regulated to some degree. You just have to be someone that believes in democracy.
Yeah, I mean, you need it. It just takes being, you know, someone who believes in the values of the New Deal, you know, a Keynesian value of the New Deal, to see that that's exactly what needs to happen. Yeah, I mean, I think we need to have a new sort of revitalization of the trust busting era, which is exactly like you're talking about. I mean, just as a personal note, I mean, if you live here in Portland, you likely use the internet and you likely have one provider that allows you to do that. And that's usually Comcast. I mean, there's a little bit of inroads made by CenturyLink, but not to anywhere near the quality that you get from Comcast. But if you then object to paying $150 for internet, they basically go, well, where else are you going to go? You know, there's no option there. Whereas if there was some sort of public broadband option or, you know, at least some form of competition to them, they may actually be able, they may be forced to bring the rates down and make it more affordable for people.
Yeah. Was that an issue during, you know, campaign season?
No, we were worried about emails.
We had 12 months, you know, yeah, or however long it was that people were paying attention.
Yeah.
And I think that would have actually, you know, that would have kept people watching the news. There's no reason that we shouldn't cover these issues. I mean, these are kind of viscerally important issues to people. And it's funny. I was you know, on a ship with these guys, you know, because I work on the docks.
Right.
And these guys work in Tacoma. One of them, he's still a casual. He works for a private water company in Washington. All of their water utilities are private. Well, not all of them, but in Tacoma at least, there's a private water utility. And then and then throughout Washington, you have these public utility districts that do power. Here, our water is public, and our power is private. And we don't discuss any. And I was like, all right, well, how old is this system? He's like, it's a 100-year-old system. And I was like, wow.
Which is like, yeah, if we look at it, most of the other aspects of our life, if we operate on rules set up 100 years ago, we generally will have updated them by now. But when it comes to that, it seems like, I mean, but yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, there's a lot of issues that were not delved into whatsoever. I mean, months ago, the Trump campaign put out, you know, what could be called his economic plan. And at no point in that economic plan dealing with the economy of the entire country, you know, workers and employers together, was there any discussion of room for organizing, you know, for unions, which, at this point, you know, obviously union membership is fairly low, and people's understanding of what the benefits provided by organized labor are is so low that I think that people, that just slipped right past and it wasn't discussed in the news very much. People who were worried about the election or concerned about it weren't really talking about that. And I think that speaks to the lack of education or lack of understanding of simply the history of labor unions and organizing in this country and what those efforts have done to provide us with the constructs of work that we exist in now. But that's probably a whole other show for some other time.
Well, you know, since you brought it up,
yeah.
One of the big things of concern is something that started pre-Trump, which is these lawsuits that go after the closed shop in the public sector, mm-hmm. and the ability of public sector unions to be involved in politics, mm-hmm. as a free speech issue, there's widespread concern that Trump's going to make sure that whoever the ninth justice is replacing Scalia, that person is going to be in favor of busting up public sector unions. And what that's going to mean is that's going to be one more, you know, huge reduction in support, potentially at least institutional support for the Democratic Party.
Right.
And where that brings me is to a place where I'm thinking, okay, this guy wants to run our country like a corporation, and you know, we're not landowners, we're not big capitalists.
Yeah.
We're the labor, and so maybe, you know, by law they've you know, ruled out all kinds of ways for workers to associate, but we need to start basically bringing the workers together the way that unions have in the past and create institutions that collect dues, that organize people to show up. And well, that collect dues, and also for your dues, you get a voice and a vote.
Right.
And you set up a platform that says, look, you know, you want the support of this organization, you gotta toe the line on you know, healthcare is a human right. You gotta toe the line on don't mess up our public schools.
Right.
You gotta toe the line on dignity in the workplace and on, you know, encouraging American made products and green jobs and not privatizing our national forest and all these issues that that are very critical to Oregon and to our country that are not being discussed. And so, you know, I'm trying to find receptive ears to putting together some sort of an organization of that nature. I think that with the internet, it's very easy to take a poll and find out what a group, you know, wants to see happen.
Yeah.
And then come election time, you know, if we get our ducks in a row, we could have a chunk of change, and we could have a group of or a network of people that are willing to volunteer and go reach out to the public in a way that money cannot, because they can't. I mean, they can afford to put advertisements on all of our TVs, but they can't afford to put people out there on doors. They can't get volunteers out there.
Yeah, where are they going to find those?
I'll guarantee you of that.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, yeah, our time has gone very quickly, as it always does. So I'd like to thank you again, Shanti, for being on the air with us. We will certainly have you back again soon. But yeah, so my guest has been Shanti Llewellyn, and I am your host, Michael Cathcart. Have a great evening.
Thanks again, Michael.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KABU is gearing up to celebrate 50 years of community radio, and we need your help. Take the Big Events Survey on KABU.fm and help us decide what kind of